We'll call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Please silence all cell phones. The time is 9 o'clock on Monday, February 26, 2024. I'm joined by Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, and myself, Senator Wilson. Both Co-Chair Hoffman and Co-Chair Stedman are conversing with other Senate business. On today's agenda, we have SJR 14 by Senator Bishop. And then we have two confirmation hearings for nominees to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And lastly, we have the Senate Bill 85 by the governor. I'd like to welcome Senator Hoffman to the committee, Maureen. You told him you were away on other state business. With that, Senator Bishop, your SJR 14 seafood industry competitiveness was heard on Friday. We'd like to invite you and your staff member to come on up and have any final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for bringing the bill back up today. I think that in and of itself shows the urgency in getting this resolution to the floor and getting it back to U.S. Congress. So I'll just leave it at that, and I appreciate it bringing it up today. Thank you.
Okay, any further comments or questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor or his trustee aide? Not, we have a motion.
I move the Senate Joint Resolution Number 14, Work Order 33-Lima Sierra 1313/Shaktulik from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, without objection, this resolution moves from committee. We have two confirmation hearings this morning. The first is John Sturgeon for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and then Brent Fisher with the Alaska, also for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. These are both renominations. Mr. Sturgeon, are you on, sir?
Good morning, Senator. This is John Sturgeon.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what your education, your work history, and as well as what you've learned in the last several years when you've been on the Mental Health Trust Authority?
Certainly, Senator. I've been in Alaska since 1970, mainly been in the forest products business, served on various boards, the Forest Practices Board, been on the board of the Resource Development Council, been on the board of Alaska Forest Association as a director, and has worked in various different nonprofits. I'm currently president of the Safari Club Alaska, been active in a lot of outdoor activities, but contribution to the Mental Health Trust is that I've been chair of the Resources Committee for the last 5 years. And as you know, the Mental Health Trust is self-sufficient. It has to generate all its own funds. And a lot of those come from, a significant amount comes from timber sales, from mining operations, from land sales, land leases, that kind of thing. And that is what I hope I bring some expertise and some help in that area. Certainly learned that the trust does certainly a lot of good work. There's a lot of issues out there that we've tried to help a lot of citizens in Alaska. And I think we have, and I'd like to continue to do that.
Any other questions by members of the committee for Mr. Sturgeon? Mr. Sturgeon, could you just touch on your education, where you went to school, if you went to school, and then just fill us in on that, please.
Yes, I went to school after serving in the U.S. Navy, went to University of Minnesota, graduated with a degree in forestry, and that's been my career ever since.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for Mr. Sturgeon? With that, I want to thank you for coming out this morning and putting your name forward for a renomination with this with the Mental Health Trust Authority.
Thank you, Senator.
Mm-hmm. We have a motion, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate Finance Committee forward the nomination of John Sturgeon to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Trustees to a joint session of the legislature. This does not reflect an intent by any member of the Senate Finance Committee to vote for or against the confirmation during any further sessions.
Without objection, This motion passes. Next we have up is Brent Fisher. Mr. Fisher, are you on, sir?
Senator Olson, this is Brent Fisher. I'm here.
Thank you very much for putting your name forward to be on the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. You're up for renomination. Please tell us a little bit about yourself, what your education is, what your education has been or is continuing to be, and your work history, and then what you've learned from the health authority while you've been on the trust.
Thank you, Senator Olson. I've been in Alaska since 2009. I've been on the trust for the last 3 years. I fulfilled the completion of a term by another trustee that left the board. During that time, I've been the chair of the finance committee and the secretary for the board of trustees. I'm currently serving as the vice chair of the board of trustees. My background is primarily in healthcare the last 30 years, a variety of different types of healthcare, including manufacturing, academic medical centers, large medical groups, also large community hospitals, that kind of thing. I currently am an owner of the Alaska Sleep Clinic, which does diagnostic testing for obstructive sleep apnea. My education, I have a bachelor's degree from Brigham Young University and an MBA from the University of Texas at Austin. I've worked over the years in healthcare and have been involved with a lot of the beneficiaries, those who qualify as beneficiaries for the trust, and so I'm very familiar with them, including in my current role in diagnostic sleep medicine. I have thoroughly enjoyed the appointment that I received to serve on the Board of Trustees. During the last 3 years, the opportunities to be involved with the service organizations or providers that help the beneficiaries has been educational for me. Although I have been involved, again, with beneficiaries throughout my healthcare career, being immersed in it the way it is with the trust has truly been enlightening for me to see the needs of those in the state of Alaska and those communities that are most in need. Recently went up to Bethel, for example, and spent some time not only in Bethel talking with members of the community there and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Corporation, but also going out to the villages and meeting with the tribal organizations and understanding their needs and the services that could better help beneficiaries in their community. So it's been an honor to serve for the last 3 years, and I hope for another appointment to continue this second term.
Okay, any other questions by members of the committee for Mr. Fisher? If not, Mr. Fisher, I guess one of the questions I have is, what was your degree and when you graduated from Brigham Young?
I graduated from BYU in 1981, and I had a double major in international relations and Portuguese.
Portuguese, it's unusual. I guess one of the other questions I have for you is, as you look at, and since you've been on the board for the last 3 years, what do you see the next 5 years? Where do you see the board being next 5 years?
The board right now, I'm very happy personally with the members of the Board of Trustees. We seem to be moving in a consistent direction and helping to provide the most effective kind of services for the beneficiaries in the state. As we look at the different grants that are being awarded and as we have the opportunity to meet with the leaders of provider organizations within the state, members of the trustees are very interested in making sure that the dollars that of the grants that are funding these provider organizations are actually being most effectively used and dedicated primarily to beneficiaries and maybe not other individuals that also receive services from the same organizations. So we want the biggest bang for the buck in those grants, and that's kind of the direction we're going. I think the biggest project that we have been supporting during the last 3 years and is continuing because it's such a big project is the Crisis Now a project that's going on. And that's making sure that no matter where a beneficiary is in the state of Alaska, they have access to counselors that can help them not make bad decisions with regard to their not only their health but their life as well. And so the Crisis Now organization is again one of the biggest, and I think will be statewide one of the most effective kinds of organizations that we're funding within the state. And there's still a lot of work to do on that, but the trustees and the staff are very supportive of moving forward and getting that implemented in the state of Alaska.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for Mr. Fisher? If not, we have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee forward the nomination of Brent Fisher to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Trustees to a joint session of the legislature. This does not reflect an intent by any member of the Senate Finance Committee to vote for or against the confirmation during any further sessions.
Is there objection? Seeing no objection, without this nominee is passed on to the joint session of the legislature. The next bill we have up is Senate Bill 85, the Permanent Fund Eligibility and Background Check by the Governor. This is its first hearing. Presenting the bill for the administration, we have two people coming forward, Genevieve Watusik and is Fidel Manami on?
Lamani, he may be online.
He is on the phone. Is he on the phone? We're not online. Ms. Watusik, since you're the director, why don't you go ahead and with the presentation, and then we'll hear from Corey Bigelow after you're finished. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Good morning. For the record, Genevieve Watusik, Permanent Fund Dividend Division Director. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 85 this morning. This is an act relating to record checks for certain employees of the Department of Revenue relating to PFDs. Does everyone have the presentation in front of them? It's a great walkthrough, so I thought I'd just go through that, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair, if you'd like me to walk through the bill.
If you would, please.
Yeah, great. So an overview of Senate Bill 85. So it's an act relating to record checks for certain employees of the Department of Revenue, so that's for both staff and contractors of the PFD division. The proposed legislation provides statutory authority to collect fingerprints for the purpose of conducting background checks on employees and contractors. The bill will allow merchant mariners to attend qualified vocational programs and be allowed an allowable absence under the PFD statutory guidelines. It adds a new subsection to education on a full-time basis. For the purpose of calculating allowable absences for students receiving secondary or post-secondary education, vocation, profession, or other specific education. It also allows the division to use the electronic notice of levy for individuals who are subjected to a court order or garnishment or writ for the collection of a debt. Currently, we can only do that through paper means by sending it in the mail. So this will allow that change. So quick walk through the sectional. Sections 1, 3, and 5 is the background checks on the employees and contractors. Section 2 is adding the definition of education on a full-time basis. So this is allowing, if this were to go into effect, this is allowing those students that are out of state at school and then don't want to come home or cannot come home for fall break, winter break, Christmas break, spring break, we're not going to count that against them. But currently in statute, we have to count every day that they're not actually in school. But these extended weekends have become problematic for a lot of students that can't come home during those breaks. Section 2 is also the merchant mariner piece, where it's allowing merchant mariner students training to become merchant mariners to attend those qualified courses and still be eligible for the PFD. Section 2 also adds a new amended section from the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, which is changing the allowable absence for the medical piece. So it used to be 45 days, and they have now changed it to 180 days for medical absence. So that's what the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute did. Section 4 is the electronic notice of levy. So that's what I was mentioning about garnishments. Currently, we have to send a letter by mail to Alaskans that have garnishments on their record, but a lot of Alaskans do choose electronic notice as their preferred method of contact, and so we'd like to change that, update that statute, but this statute was written before emails were around, so it's something we need to change by statute. And then sections 5, 6, and 7 are the regulation change language and effective date language and effective date. And that is the bill.
Do we have any members, or any questions from members of the committee for Ms. Watusi?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you just walk us through the break or holiday language? I don't recall that not coming home for spring break used to be a disqualification. Is that what we're talking about?
Ms. Watusik.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. Yeah, thank you for the question. So we count the number of absences for how long you're out of state, and we get those dates from the educational absence form from the registrar. It's a signed form of when students are actually in school, and they can note the spring break times. And so we want to make sure that students that don't come home for spring break for any reason aren't counted against getting their PFDs. They still need to come home for the summer unless they're on a different allowable absence for that reason. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to disqualify them for staying on campus during Christmas break or fall break, one of those 1 week breaks, because every day counts towards that allowable absence total.
So, can you follow?
Thank you. On a slightly different topic,
please.
Can you talk to us about the fingerprinting? Is that something that we have been doing? Have we been doing non-fingerprint based checks? What's our current practice?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. We do not do any background checks at this time through the division. And through our risk manager, who we've had on board for the department for the past couple of years, it is one of these safety tools that they do want to have implemented into our division. Both Child Support and Tax Division have that in their statutory authority. So does the Unemployment Office at Labor. But we're just in this subcategory of not getting federal funds or having HIPAA, but we do have a lot of personal identifiable information, PII, and we do want to continue to protect it.
Senator Keel.
Follow up on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the risks are we're mitigating against? What exactly are we concerned about here?
Ms. Matusik.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. We just want to make sure that every employee and contractor is following every statute and making sure that Alaskans' identities and banking information and personal information is secure. So we just want to ensure that we're taking every step we can, and we believe this is a step in that direction.
Can I ask a further question related to that? Has there been a problem in the past with some of these people that have been questionably eligible?
Chair Olson, there has been no problems. This is just something we would like to implement, but we have had no issues with staff in the past or contractors.
Follow-up, Senator Q.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So then maybe you could help us out with how much of that information is available at all. I know we have gone through in the last couple of decades some changes in how much information about a permanent fund dividend application is available. Once upon a time, there were data brokers who were very upset that we tightened up the privacy restrictions. What's available now if I were to just walk in and say I want the public records?
Ms. Watusik.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. As an Alaskan individual, not as a staff, is that correct? That's what you're asking, as an individual?
Chairman, it might be good to get both.
Yes.
Okay. So through the chair, Senator Keel, as a staff person for the Department of Revenue PFD division, you do sign confidentiality agreements, but you do have information for everything that an Alaskan has applied for the PFD. So anything you fill out on that application is then in our database called the DAIS system, Dividend Application Information System. So that's your name, your social, your bank account, your bank name, your address, your past address, your verifiers to say that you were in state these past 2 years. So it's a lot of PII. And then follow up for the question for members of the public that come in. You're asking if they want to see someone else's application?
Mr. Chairman, can I get, once upon a time you could get, I think, the names of permanent fund dividend recipients and I think also an identifier. So there were data brokers who could then for instance, match that against a voter registration list. What can an ordinary person off the street get?
Thank you for that clarification through the chair, Senator Keel. So we did tighten our regulations this past year, again, through our risk manager and criminal investigation unit. These are all streamlining our security measures. We used to have that database available online, but as of January 1 of this year, we did take that off of online. You can still ask for the database. You can ask for every Alaskan that applied for the PFD, like for 2023, but we will now send it to you in a paper format. So it is still in our regulations that you can receive a copy of every Alaskan that applied, and it's just their name and if they applied. That's the only data we provide. That's what's in statute currently.
Thank you.
I want to welcome Senator Stedman to the Finance Committee. He's been here for a few minutes, was away on other state business. Any other questions by members of the committee for Ms. Watusi? Next, we have Corey Bigelow. Mr. Bigelow, are you on, sir?
Thank you, Chair. This is Corey Bigelow.
Go ahead with your presentation.
I apologize, Chair. I think there may be some confusion. I do not have a presentation. I am simply available for any additional questions if Ms. Watusik is unable to answer them.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Bigelow but members of the committee? If not, we have. Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. If you'd stay online in case we do have more questions for you a little later on, Mr. Bigelow, we'd appreciate it. Next is Fidel Lobby on. No. Okay, we also have Kim Lane, who's on for questions. Do we have any questions for Ms. Lane? Mr. Bigelow, we do have a question on the fiscal note. You wrote the fiscal note. Can you just identify it or present it to us, please?
I'm sorry. For the record, this is Corey Bigelow, PFD Operations Manager. Chair, would you please repeat that question?
It's my understanding that you wrote the fiscal note, Mr. Bigelow. So could you speak to it while you're here?
I apologize.
Take it at ease.
The fiscal note.
Call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. Mr. Bigelow, your name was on the bottom of the fiscal note, but if you'd rather have Ms. Watusik present it, we're glad to go and listen to her.
I've got it in front of me, Corey. For the record, Genevieve Watusik, Director of the PFD Division. We do have a zero fiscal note attached. There are some costs that are incurred. It's a couple thousand, about $3,000 for that initial startup cost of doing all the background checks, but we are able to incur that within the division.
So it's my understanding, as I look at the fiscal note, that these several thousand dollars of costs is not an increment to the budget, but it will be absorbed within the permanent fund?
Chairman, yes.
Okay. Any further questions on the fiscal note to Ms. Watusi? If not, thank you very much for addressing that. That was the main question I had, was were we asking for an increment or was it going to be absorbed within the permanent fund staff? We have invited testimony. The first one up is Rich Berkowitz from the Transportation Institute in Seattle. Mr. Berkowitz, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am, Chairman Olson. My name is Rich Berkowitz. I was the Vice President of the Transportation Institute Pacific Coast for about 27 years. I was involved with the initial effort to allow merchant mariners who lived and worked in Alaska and were, for all other purposes, eligible for the permanent fund to be able to get permanent fund dividend despite working outside, sometimes directly in the Alaska trade, working on tankers or container ships or airline vessels to obtain their permanent fund dividend. At that time, it was also inclusive that if they were in training, merchant mariners would be able to receive their permanent fund dividend at qualified training. In 2017, there's a change in the rule that the permanent fund division decided to qualify what was legitimate training, and they came up with a definition that was recognized by the Alaska Post-Secondary Commission on Post-Secondary Education. That requirement stated that you had to be eligible, that if you were to get permanent fund dividend, you had to be going to an institution that was eligible for federal financial aid, which made, you know, abundant sense that it should be a legitimate school outside. However, in this case, with merchant mariners, this is they go to a labor management funded school through a union apprenticeship recognized by both the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Department of Labor. So there is no tuition that is required to enter the school and graduate from the school, and it created this situation where merchant mariners who got this training, which is required by the Coast Guard, would not be eligible for the permanent fund dividend while they were in the training. They would remain eligible once they started working. So I want to make it clear to the committee that this would not really change anything that we had for nearly 20 years, from 1999 to 2017. It would really essentially reinstate the eligibility that was recognized by the state legislature for merchant mariners, some of whom are in the direct routes that Alaska Tanker Company and Tote and Matson currently are on, supporting Alaska and providing goods or picking up goods from Alaska to bring south. So this, I urge the committee to essentially support what the governor has requested, which is to provide, you know, special recognition for merchant mariners going to eligible U.S. Coast Guard certified programs that provides them with the opportunity to work in Alaska, to work outside as merchant mariners, supporting both the state, the nation. As many of you may know, merchant mariners are expected to support the military during times of conflict, which they readily do so, and also are exemplified by supporting emergency operations if a catastrophe takes place, whether it be Puerto Rico or Haiti or somewhere else in our nation or nearby. I am gratified to know that there have been over 800 Alaskans that have been trained through this program. We hope that there will be many more. The school has been around for over 50 years. It also has the most diverse and largest number of U.S. Coast Guard certified maritime classes in the nation, and has maintained this USDOL registered apprenticeship program for the last 20 years, and has been many beneficiaries in Alaska are proud graduates of the program. I'd be happy to answer any questions you, Mr. Chair, or other members of the committee may have. The program has long been supported by our congressional delegation and had nearly unanimous vote back in 1999 when it passed the legislature allowing Metro Mariners to be eligible for the permanent fund dividend, provided they met all the other restrictions and qualifications for an Alaskan as a PFD and PFD eligibility. Thank you.
Mr. Berkowitz, thank you very much for coming out this morning. Do you have any questions of him by members of the committee? I guess one of the questions I do have, Mr. Berkowitz, is has anybody, under the circumstances when somebody's gone out for training like this and they're not paying any tuition for it, has there anybody been challenged about their eligibility for the PFD?
Yes. Since this change in the regulation that substitutes what essentially the legislature allowed back in 1999 to what the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education requires, there have been a number of Alaskans that have been denied that eligibility, which has been really quite frustrating. Part of the one of the main reasons that we sought this back in the late 90s was because when you tell an Alaskan youth, hey, I got this great opportunity where you're going to get good wages, you'll get union benefits and family medical and dental and a pension and a 401k, and all you have to do is go through this U.S. Coast Guard certified classes and graduate successfully from it, and you'll be eligible. Everyone who goes through the program is guaranteed a job, and they say, well, what about my permanent fund dividend? And at that time, back in the late 90s, when we really had this aggressive recruitment program in Alaska because we wanted to honor Alaskans' conviction about local hire, the first question that would come out of their mouths is, what about my permanent fund dividend? And as an 18, 19-year-old youth, that's really the money that they were used to. And we'd have to tell them, well, under the law, you as a merchant mariner or a merchant mariner of training would not be eligible for the PFD. So that changed. Well, up until 2017, there were no problems, and there have been a number of individuals that have not been able to get their permanent fund dividend because of this 6 to 9 months in training that they experience. And part of that training includes being on the ship during the experiential learning. So that is correct, Chairman Olson.
Okay, thank you very much for coming out this morning. Any further questions for Mr.
Sure.
Berkowitz, my member of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning. We'll go on to our next person who's also online, and that's Sarah Schreier with the Vice President of Pacific Coast Operations Transportation Institute. Ms. Schreier, are you on, ma'am?
Yes, sir, I am.
Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Shearer. I'm a seasoned professional with over 3 decades of experience in the maritime sector. As I said, I work for the Transportation Institute. We conduct research, education, and advocacy for the U.S. flagged merchant fleet. And here in Alaska, those U.S. maritime carriers include Matson Navigation, Alaska Tanker Company, Crowley, Tote, and as a maritime industry, we've actively been promoting local hire in Alaska for over 25 years and employed more than 800 Alaskans who have gone to this training program that's associated with the Seafarers International Union. And like Mr. Berkowitz said, the training is free because the vessel operators contribute to a joint labor management training trust fund. And so when this rule got changed, it had a huge unintended consequence on our mariners and the folks that were going to training. So our mission is to make sure that maritime apprentices, that we are still actively recruiting in Alaska so that we have a union hall in Alaska, so that people can get their training, then come back to Alaska, keep that revenue and those wages right here in Alaska. So our mission is making sure that these folks don't get denied their PFD because of this unintended consequence that since 2017 that we've been working on this to try and get it changed, everyone agrees was not intended and that this should be changed. So I appreciate your time. Please adopt this 85 so that we can change this unintended consequence. So these folks are eligible for their PFD, which will help us do even more recruiting for these amazing living wage jobs where people can bring that money back into Alaska. Alaska mariners, there are 6,500 jobs in Alaska, and 800 of those, like I said, have been hired as trainees who joined our apprenticeship program. The maritime industry brings $1.9 billion into the local economy, and we need to keep supporting that. Thank you very much.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Schreier? Ms. Schreier, one of the things I was going to ask was how many, I realize you have 6,500 people that are working there, 800 of which are Alaskans. How many of these people are participating in the permanent fund? How many of these 800 people are getting the permanent fund dividend annually?
You know what? I don't know how many people annually are getting their permanent fund dividend.
Okay. Do you have an approximate amount that there's there?
I think there is a number in the presentation. Let's see. The number of Alaskans that claimed an absence from Alaska for the employment as merchant mariners in 2022 was 12.
Okay.
And then in 2021 was 15, 2020 was 12, 2019 was 19, and 2018 was 15. So it's not a huge number of people right now, but it is also, we in the maritime industry are in a huge shortage of people, and we are actively trying to recruit because it's a national security issue that we don't have enough people to sail our vessels.
Okay, it sounds like we do have a definitive answer by Ms. Watusik. If you come on up and identify yourself for the record and answer the question.
Great, thank you.
Thank you for coming out this morning.
For the record,
please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, Genevieve Watusik, Director of the PFD Division. What the previous testifier testified to was the correct number as to what we have as identified as Alaskans that did note merchant mariner on their PFD applications for those past 5 years.
And give me those numbers again, please. There's 12 and 15. And
sure. In 2022, it was a total of 12. In 2021, it was a total of 15. In 2020, it was a total of 12. In 2019, it was a total of 19. And in 2018, it was a total of 15 that noted it on their applications.
Yeah, any further questions from Mr. I'm sorry, Senator Wilson?
Yes, I do have a question for the director. I'm just wondering if you could run through how the scenario would work here. Someone's attending school full time, and right now the breaks are only for the winter break and the spring break scenarios. But what about a break in between if I was attending school full time during summer, and that break between the summer school starts and between the end of the fall or the spring semester, summer semester, and then start up at the fall semester? Would this bill not cover that type of scenario if someone went to attend school for the summer or some type of practicum or internship?
Ms. Watusik.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I do have Kim Lane on, my eligibility expert, so I'm going to defer to her, but it is all counted. It just depends on the timing of when you're actually full-time in school or on a school program. But if we wouldn't mind having Kim Lane answer that question directly, if you're still on, Kim.
Kimberly Lane, are you on, ma'am?
Good morning. This is Kimberly Lane. I'm with PFD Office Eligibility Manager. Through the chair, the time... Once a individual starts school full-time, the time between breaks, going early before school starts or staying a couple days after, all that would be covered with this bill.
Honorable Senator Wilson.
Yes, I just want to make sure because it says not including summer break. And so just didn't know how that definition of summer break would be if I was attending full-time status in that break between summer and fall and fall and summer and spring and how that would be calculated. So it just seemed to be absent on that piece of legislation.
Ms. Lane, could you clear that up for us, please? He does have a valid question there, and it is unclear as to what really is happening.
Yes, I can. Through the chair, the summer school period usually is not full time, so that would be part of the 120 days in addition that an individual student would start accumulating these days in addition. When you start adding up the 100 or the summer school plus the break plus the going early, staying a few days later, that's where students are getting caught over 120 days. But the 120 days going to summer school, which is usually not full time, that is covered in our the allowable absence. It's those that are going over the 120 days that are getting caught because there's a week period where they're out at spring break or stayed a couple days past being registered for the class.
Honorable Senator Wilson?
Yeah, I think that's an assumption that is a huge assumption that's being made that you wouldn't have people attending summer school on a full-time basis or attending a full-time internship or a full-time practicum type of scenario, Mr. Chair, or in terms of semester hours or quarter hours and how that is calculated by our Commission on Post-Secondary Education as well. So I just think that could be something that needs to be clarified or can be made clarification with just saying not attending a full-time summer program type of scenario as well.
For the record, Genevieve Watusik, thank you, Senator Wilson. On that, it's not necessarily an assumption. We do get a verified education verification form from the school registrar that they must sign and fill out when they're on full-time and not remote. So we do know if they're taking summer classes and full-time, but for the most part, as Kim Lane had testified, it does not usually appear that way. They're usually taking half-time, and that is not qualified under this.
Right. Senator Wilson.
But it's full-time. It does not say full-time is not qualified under this either. And so I'm just wondering from those breaks, that's a huge chunk of time that would not be qualified. And I just would hate to have us come back here at a later time and date because I think, you know, you might have more than 12 students that might qualify under that full-time status, which seems to be the number that we're writing a piece of legislation for to cover the other folks. So I just don't want to miss out on the opportunity for some of those students who might be in some other type of residency type program or some other trades program that has that time frame as well that we could be missing.
Ms. Watusik, further comment?
Thank you for that. We can take that under advisement and take a look at those records.
One of the questions I do have for you is that if somebody's going through summer school or any school in general for that matter, and what if they drop out halfway through? Are they still eligible for the PFD?
Chair Olson, it depends. They would need, if they came back to Alaska right after, you know, and they were under the time frame for the education allowable absence, then yes, you know, based in that they all the other eligibility requirements were still kept. They didn't vote out of state. They didn't get a driver's license out of state. They didn't do all of these disqualifying measures. So, but yes, just on that, if they did decide to quit school but come home before the allowable absence time frame ended, then yes, they could still be qualified.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut the director off. I do have a question on how enforcement would work in terms of qualifying years, because are we just looking at a calendar year in terms of enforcement? Because if I were to take that time off in December, that would count in the previous year's dividend, but I'm applying the following year, and so I would have to show my intent in the current year as well as the following year of time missed, or how does that work in terms of application days missed and actually doing the investigations on these type of matters?
Ms. Watusik.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'd like to defer this one to Kim Lane. She sees these education verification forms religiously, and she would be able to testify to this better.
Ms. Lane, are you on, ma'am?
I am.
Did you hear the question?
Yes, I did. Thank you. Through the chair, the application period covers what absences were taken during the qualifying year, which is always the prior year. So for 2024, all the absences would cover from January 1 of 2023 through December 31st, 2023. So it's all the applicable absences for that full year.
Follow up, Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you. So if I was, it would be just having the intent to go to school in 2024, which would qualify me if I missed that time in December between breaks, or would you also have to verify if I apply for the 2024 dividend that I'm actually attending school full time in 2024 as well because of the winter breaks?
Ms. Lane.
Through the chair, we do get the verification from the school on the education verification form. They do also let us know if they're currently registered as well, and they do provide us with a estimated graduation date. So we kind of see if they're going to continue or if they graduated in December or May of last year. So we have an idea of what that intent is.
Follow-up, Senator Wilson.
Yeah, I guess, Mr. Chair, so do you get that form when someone applies for their dividend? Is that just covering that calendar year, or is it counting the 2024 time frame as well? If I apply for a 24 dividend, I submit all my documents for 2023, but wouldn't you also have to have my forms filled out for the semester, the spring semester of 2024 as well?
Ms. Lane.
Through the chair, the form does allow for the spring semester to be reported as well.
Thank you.
Any further questions by members of the committee for either Mr. Tusick or Ms. Lane? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning. We have Fidel Lamani in the office, or in the room. Would you mind coming on up and having some comments on this bill, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Fidel Lamani. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Department of Revenue. I apologize that I couldn't be here a little bit earlier this morning. I was in flight to Juneau. Mr. Chair, this bill is pretty straightforward. Over the last couple of years, the department, through the PFD division, has made significant improvements to protecting Alaskans' personable identifiable information. And this bill here essentially strengthens those efforts. I believe Director Watusik has gone through the different provisions of the bill covering the four key areas. And I'm happy to address any questions the committee may have for me.
Do we have questions for Mr. Lamani by members of the committee? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 7, section 7, are you anticipating making this retroactive to January 2024, or is it for January 1, 2025?
Ms. Matusik.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we would like it to be proactive and start at 1/1/25 and amend the bill slightly to that time frame.
Mr. Lamani, I do have a question from, as there was a changes being done in labor and commerce that changed it from 45 days to 180 days for sick leave. Was the administration in favor of that?
I defer for the time being, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Watusik, do you have any ideas? Okay, we'll hold on that question then. Well, if there's any other questions by members of the committee to the invited testimony personnel, we'll go ahead and close open public testimony to anybody in the room that wants to testify on this Senate bill. I see nobody in the room that wants to go ahead and testify. Anybody online want to go ahead and testify on Senate Bill 85? Now we'll go ahead and close public testimony. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside. That concludes our agenda for today. The next meeting is tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., February 27th. We'll be hearing two bills, Senate Bill 105 by the Senate Transportation Committee, Alaska Railroad Financing and the Seward Cruise Dock, Senate Bill 205 by Senator Kaufman, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Authority to Acquire a Building. There's no further business to come before the committee. We're adjourned at 10:53 a.m.